Greetings, investors. I'm Rudy Von Oboli. It's Friday, September 14th, and this is Guild's weekly market commentary podcast. If you like what you hear today, please be sure to hit subscribe so you can listen to us every week. Before we get started, I would like to remind our listeners that we are having our quarterly forecast, our regular conference call and webinar on Wednesday, September 26th at 10 a.m. Pacific time, where we're going to cover the most important trends that are affecting your portfolio, let you know how we currently view the world, and tell you where we believe you can find the best investment opportunities. We welcome your calls and questions, as always, for that conference call. And you can either just listen to the call, or you can send in questions live during the call, or send us questions beforehand. Please head over to our website, www.guildinvestment.com, so that you can register for that conference call today. Again, it will be held on Wednesday, September 26th at 10 a.m. Pacific time. This week, we're starting out by talking about China. For several years, we've been alerting our readers to the dangers posed by the overleverage of the Chinese financial system. Eventually, this overleverage could result in a financial crisis within China. Direct contagion would be limited because China's financial system is largely separate from the rest of the world's, but there would still be negative consequences for many banks outside China and for the global economy if a crisis resulted in a Chinese economic slowdown or recession. When the next global recession begins, as we have said repeatedly, it could be precipitated by a crisis in China or in Europe, which faces very different troubles, but also has a financial system challenged by bad debts. Indeed, Europe may be in worse shape because of its fractious politics and lack of a strong central financial authority. A crisis in China does not appear imminent. Just as we've been watching the risk of a Chinese financial crisis for years, we've also been watching those who believed it was imminent and who invested on that basis. This is one of those areas where being early is the same as being wrong. For some medical patients, the best course of action is alert inaction, what they call watchful waiting. This is what we do with China and with the global financial system as a whole. We monitor stresses as we try to discern when action will be warranted. Now, China has experienced several decades of very strong economic growth since its turn towards domestic free market economics and its entry into the World Trade Organization. As is often the case, that boom time resulted in the buildup of a lot of debt, as economic optimism and loosened legal strictures encouraged lenders and borrowers. Much of that debt accrued outside of formal banking, in the so-called shadow banking system. The authorities permitted the emergence of this financial sector to encourage and facilitate more rapid growth. There was also a good deal of theft involved, as the sector afforded avenues for corrupt officials to use to steal money and ultimately to get it out of China, where it has helped bid up asset prices around the world, particularly real estate in many desirable markets in Canada, Australia, and the United States. Over the past few years, particularly under the anti-corruption campaign begun by President Xi Jinping, China has begun addressing the overleverage of its shadow banking system. It is a delicate process because measures that are too harsh could result in an economic slowdown, and maintaining economic growth is the basis of the unwritten social contract that China's authoritarian rulers have with the Chinese people. Their social and political liberties are curtailed, and in exchange, the government continues to successfully engineer more of the growth that has lifted so many Chinese people out of poverty over the past three decades. The leaders of China's Communist Party believe that if they fail to make good on that promise, they will face significant social unrest or even the loss of their power. They must simultaneously stabilize their financial system, reduce bad debts, fight corruption, and maintain economic growth. It is a tall order, but so far they have been successful. Typically, they'll have a period of several months of tightening in which they make financial conditions more stringent and enforce rules more strictly, even permitting some unofficial financial enterprises to fail without bailing out their creditors. Then they follow with a period of loosening before the effects of tighter policy can cause growth to decline. The latest round of loosening ended late last year, and government policy this year has again focused on the reduction of risk in the unofficial banking sector, particularly on controlling local government debt. Other priorities have included items drawn from the blueprint created at the end of last year when President Xi Jinping launched his New Era Economics, environmental policy, especially improving air quality in Beijing, and housing policy to try to curb the risk of property bubbles. Recently, we noticed one revealing item. Part of China's debt problem has been moral hazard, which means that people put money into schemes in the unofficial banking sector in an attempt to earn higher yields, expecting that the government will bail them out in the event of a default. The government has gradually been letting entities in the unofficial banking sector go bust and not stepped in to make lenders and investors whole. Recently, though, there's been a big spike of failures in two areas. One is wealth management companies, or WMCs, which are unofficial sector lenders who promise savers a rate of return much greater than that provided by official banks. The other is P2P, or peer-to-peer, fintech, financial technology, lending platforms. So much household savings is in WMCs and P2P products that analysts believe defaults could ultimately have a significant impact on consumer spending. As the defaults spiked this year in June and July, popular anger rose and the government quickly shut down and dispersed protests in major cities. So rather than let this surge of defaults continue and let the chips fall where they may and let public anger keep rising, the government has asked its four big distressed asset managers to step in and shore up the WMC and P2P sectors. In short, a big step backwards in the reduction of moral hazard, as products that the government was on track to permit to fail are instead getting bailed out after all. It just goes to underline how tough the problems are that the managers of China's finances and economy are dealing with, and how delicate the balancing act among the different goals they are pursuing. For now, it is not the sign of an imminent crisis, but it is worth watching. As far as China investing goes, while trade tensions and currency conflicts persist, the Chinese stock market, which is driven largely by sentiment among Chinese retail investors, is unlikely to perform well. At some future juncture, a resolution of trade issues, a rise in investor sentiment, and a cycle of looser financial policy will occur. Only then will we reconsider China as an investment destination. And at some point in the unknown future, China will be vulnerable to a genuine financial crisis. That time is not imminent, but if it occurs, it will have global consequences. So investors should continue to monitor Chinese financial conditions. Here's our summary of the events of the week in global markets. In the U.S. market and the U.S. economy, as we have been mentioning frequently in these pages, we continue to have a bullish view. More positive economic data surface each week. This week, we learned that small business optimism in the U.S. is at the highest level that it has ever reached in its 45-year history. We also discovered that there are 650,000 more jobs available in the U.S. than the total number of job seekers. We learned that this gap has been growing each week for several months. Our basic view has always been that first, stocks follow corporate profits. Today, corporate profits are growing at almost 24% due to lower taxes, rapid growth in capital investment, and the hiring of new personnel. Second, corporate profits follow economic activity. Currently, economic activity is at a multi-year high. Contrary to a well-publicized establishment view that the U.S. is locked in a 1.5 to 2% growth rate, recent U.S. GDP growth rate has been 4.2%, and U.S. growth will probably exceed 3% in 2018 and early 2019. Third, economic activity is a function of availability of capital and incentives to growth. Incentives to growth are the best they have been in the U.S. for many years. Capital is available and plentiful now that banks have been restructured and small banks have had regulatory restrictions removed. Lower taxes, removal of regulatory overreach, and the publicity that successful high-tech startup businesses have received have inspired many to start new businesses and expand existing ones. In short, people respond to incentives, and seeing others become successful is a psychological incentive. And finally, capital availability drives business growth, and low inflation allows business to borrow at low rates to expand. Inflation is still low, and signs on the horizon are for slightly higher, but not extreme inflation. This argues for further U.S. economic growth. We remain bullish on U.S. stocks and believe that disruptive technology, cloud services, cybersecurity, specialty retailing, biotechnology, financial technology, travel, and entertainment are attractive sectors for investment. Moving to Europe, Europe is just the opposite of the U.S., and currently it is doing poorly. Why? First, the banking system has not been restructured. It has bad debts and limited lending capacity to provide capital that could be the engine of business growth for Europe. And second, regulations, which have been moderated in the U.S., making it possible to expand and grow into new areas, have been tightened in Europe and are raising businesses' costs of operation. We are avoiding Europe. Within Europe, Eastern Europe and Switzerland are doing best because they are incentivizing business expansion. On emerging markets are not as poorly managed as Europe, and some of them have the potential to do well once the US dollar rally ends and the dollar begins to move sideways or down. It is not time yet, but when the time arrives, we will be buying Thailand, India, and perhaps some others, including China. Gold continues in a sideways pattern. We're still being told by technicians that a close below 1185 will then see gold decline below $1,000. We have long supported gold, and we continue to believe that it is an excellent store of value for long-term preservation of capital. Cryptocurrencies may be seen more favorably by a younger demographic, and currency problems in some countries mean that some central banks are sellers of gold. However, a sideways or weaker dollar will be constructive for gold, and we note that the Bloomberg Commodity Index may be close to bottoming. In the world of cryptocurrencies, Gemini, a well-regarded New York-based crypto exchange which has pursued high standards of regulatory compliance, introduced an ERC-20 stablecoin. That is, a one-to-one U.S. dollar-backed digital currency employing the Ethereum platform. Gemini's offering is made with the approval of the New York Department of Financial Services. The option of a legitimate, regulated, fiat-backed digital currency could ultimately have a profound impact on the entire crypto ecosystem, and as it is adopted by other exchanges, could provide rapid and inexpensive ways for consumers to conduct cross-border transactions without exposing themselves to radical fluctuations in the value of their holdings. Thanks for listening. As always, we welcome your calls and questions. If you like what you heard today, please subscribe to this podcast and listen to us again each week. And if you have the opportunity on Wednesday, September 26th at 10 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time to join us for Guild's quarterly forecast, we would love to have you there and to answer your questions there as well. Please visit us at www.guildinvestment.com to sign up for our conference call today. Thanks, and have a good weekend, everybody.